Welcome to episode 8 of the Level 5 podcast. My name's Steve Willoughby, and we're going to jump right into it with Eric Reynolds. You know him. You can find more about him at LVL5consulting.com, on Facebook at EQR Coach, or on LinkedIn at Eric Q Reynolds. Eric, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Good afternoon.
So the Level 5 podcast is about leadership, and the Level 5 podcast is really about sales, and it's about a lot of different things that businesses are facing right now. But when it comes right down to it, it's about coaching, right? I mean, that's really Yes. what Level 5 is all about. Let's talk about coaching, and let's talk to the person who's never been in a coaching session as an adult. I mean, most of us had coaches growing up. Some of us, you know, they still have the golf coach or whatever, but the business coach moving forward, what is that experience like?
Yeah, great question. And I'm excited to talk about these today because I think it will give folks a preview into what that experience is like. You know, when you mentioned the childhood coach, I was going to say either the scars or the mm-hmm. great memories, mm-hmm. right?
Or both.
Or both. Or both, depending upon the situation there. So, you know, when we have coaching sessions and we go through the process of coaching, it really, at its highest level, begins the individual down the road of understanding that it's all on them. And also getting comfortable with their, with sort of carrying that weight if that's how they approach it. So these principles that we'll talk about today are all anchored in one thing, and that's accountability, self-accountability as part of the process. And so as a coach, when I'm starting with an executive or an executive team, because there are times when I have done just sort of coaching an entire team as part of a process.
Is there one you prefer more as far as?
I prefer the individual coaching. Okay. I think that folks tend to be more direct in right. those situations, more honest about, you know, I sucked win this week and didn't get anything close to what I had wanted to get as far as what we talked about in the previous session. But having said that, there's also some pretty interesting dynamics that can happen in a group environment. So, but getting them comfortable with the concept that it's not about what Bob does that affects you. It's not about Jane. It's not about the drive-in to work. It's not about how your computer system doesn't quite function the way you need it to at the office. It's about what you're doing about those things. So, you know, you have to at times ease people into that. And, you know, coaching is designed to get you there, but also make you fully aware that that's on you, so to speak.
What you just talked about, though, Eric, I mean, if people can't grasp that and truly understand it, but be able to implement it, because in a conversation like this, you can grasp it and say, okay, it's really not what happens. It's my response. Do I respond or do I react? And all of those different things. But if you can't do that during the course of live fire of a day, and I shouldn't have said that because there's people that face live fire, but all of the stuff happening throughout the course of the day, if you can't mentally say, this is why I'm here. I mean, if there wasn't any problems, they wouldn't need me, and they wouldn't need to pay me this money. Yeah. So let's respond and let's try to correct that situation. But if you can't do that, a coach is going to have a difficult time helping you, right?
Well, it's where they're likely going to end up focusing. Whether the individual knows it or not, coaches will have ways as we ask questions about what's going on. And we've touched on this in the past. We don't provide solutions. That's not a coach's job. The coach's role is to help you as an individual provide those solutions for yourself. And when you talk about your example of, you know, things coming at you in all different directions, one of the things too that coaching helps an individual discern as well is when someone else is avoiding accountability. Does that sound important as a manager to know when you'll be able to spot it, if you will?
Right.
Especially conversationally, body language, whatever the situation might be, to understand that, okay, that's not my responsibility as GM or as CEO, but your responsibility now is to help that person understand and clarify that's their responsibility. So it's, in a perfect world, if everybody was accountable for their own stuff, whatever that is going throughout the day, I don't know what would happen. It'd be pretty crazy. So as imperfect beings, we're just trying to be as good at it as we can.
But is it, and I don't want to get off the subject here, but I want to walk a little bit further down this road. I mean, people look at successful people sometimes, and first of all, they say, well, they're lucky or they're this or they're that, which yeah. hurts my heart when that happens, to be very honest with you. You don't have to like all successful people, and you don't have to, but let's pay them the respect. They stayed in the fight. That's why they're successful.
Right.
And really, when it comes right down to it, isn't that what success is? Continuing to learn how to get better, continuing to try that again, continuing to, if I can speak in the vernacular a little bit, just get your ass handed to you, but just keep going. Isn't that how they got to that successful part? And to me, it is. So this is a key part of that coaching, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, that awareness of, if we go straight to level five, as an example, the namesake for my company, you get your ass handed to you, as you said, from time to time. To be able to look at that and go, man, that was something, and actually take a step back and say, okay, now why did that happen? I'm fascinated why that happened. He mopped the floor with me, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you're in a sales conversation and someone that's your prospect just flies circles around you like you're in a, World War I biplane and he's in an F-22 Raptor or something like that, So those moments are all opportunities. It's not winning or losing. It's an opportunity to go, okay, how can I know I'm getting into that moment? Maybe it's not even possible for a certain situation for you to sort of match that individual, but to have awareness that you are coming into that moment and to handle it in a much better way to get a better outcome, that's growth through coaching.
So back to that person that's never been a part of that coaching, and they have an appointment with Eric, and how do you want them to prepare? What do you want them to be like to maximize that coaching? I mean, obviously, this has got to be a big part of it, is understanding this is on me, right? Moving forward.
It needs to be, for sure. There needs to be that awareness. And as we talk about some of these principles here, they'll just be evident that accountability is a recurring theme through them. Preparation for a coaching session is different with every session. It really depends upon what was discussed previously, what the individual wants to do in that moment. We could, for example, have been on a track where I'm working with a new sales leader. I'm sort of three-in-one-ing them. I'm mentoring them, I'm coaching them, and I'm consulting them, right? All in one package there. And we're working on helping them get their CRM going so that they're actually developing a process that provides them truthful information from which to act upon, okay? And then they have that day. They have that day where they caught a rep, just exaggerating a deal. They were counting on that deal. And so they come into the session. They do not want to talk about what we've been talking about the past three sessions. They need some coaching help on a rather emergent topic, if you will. We'll talk about that during that session. I'm not the one that guides what we discuss in those moments. I'm letting the individual take me where they need to go. We are always keeping one eye on the sponsored goals. So in other words, if the company is paying for that coaching session for that individual, we're keeping an eye on where we need to be for those goals. But we also understand life happens in those situations. So the coach has to be flexible enough to help the individual address the situation, aware enough to know, is that really material to where we're trying to go? And then also keep an eye on the prize, if you will, where you want to get that individual from starting to finishing point.
You talk about the greatest freedom is the freedom of choice. I love that line. I love what it says and what it stands for. But go ahead and explain it to me even more.
Yeah, so quite simply, it is, you know, what we are imbued with as you know, creatures of God, right? As humans and what is sort of our right. We have been given that freedom of choice. We always have that ability, whether it's at large scale or small scale. I could have walked in to do the podcast today and, you know, someone could have remarked that, man, you know, your truck's dirty today. So I know I have a choice, right? I could react to that and just go, oh, it's not that dirty. I washed it yesterday and just sort of let that impact me. Or I could choose to just, you know, handle it in another way that keeps me back at that anabolic energy level, that level 5 type zone. So we have a choice in how we react. And part of coaching is trying to help individuals decide that most of us, before you have any awareness around coaching, go through the day-to-day making unconscious reactions to things that happen to you. So you're letting the day lead you versus you leading through the day, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
We've all had those days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can have, you know, body blow after body blow after, but, you know, 3 in a row start off before it's even noon, right? You still have a half day left. What are you going to do? You know, is that something that you're going to crawl under your desk and lock the office door and don't want to talk to anybody about it? Is it something you're going to work on to get some perspective and just kind of check yourself as to where you are? In fact, something I haven't talked about in any of these podcasts is IPEC actually has the coaching school I went to actually has an app that you can use, pop it up on your phone and do a little self-assessment on where you are in the moment. You know, how am I reading? What am I looking at energetically right now? And it's a good way to just get a grasp. It takes 30 seconds. And it's a good way to just get a grasp on, okay, I'm not going to let that slide me off the waterfall, you know, that type of thing. So we have that freedom. I think what's, you know, you phrased it very interestingly, and let's go deeper on that, right? So if we go deeper on that, you would not believe how individuals can writhe under this freedom, right? Because they do not want to be accountable for their own life. And I mean, take that scene in the bedroom in Exorcist. Mm-hmm. I have had coaching sessions like that, where I have, in one form or another, mentioned these foundation principles. And by the way, there's 20 or 30 of these. We're just doing a sampling of them. That we get trained on, but they just do not want to accept ownership of their day, of their life, of their decisions. And it's powerful. I mean, it can be incredibly, it can actually lead to dysfunction, which again goes back to, okay, at some point I'm going to have to say, you're not trying to go from good to great, right? From functional to optimal. You're actually dysfunctional, in my professional opinion. And so therapy would be a good approach to get you from dysfunctional to functional.
And you can be listening to this and go, well, that's just not me. And hopefully it's not. But at the same time, how often do we blame the chamber? At the same time, how often do we blame weather or we blame whatever? And that's why people aren't in our businesses for whatever the reason is. And I just, this is, This is fascinating to me because of the successful people I know or that I don't know but read about. I mean, you look at I always get his name wrong, Jocko Willick, who has come back from the Navy SEALs a training program and all
he
that.
He actually spoke at a corporate event we had
One
time. Yeah, with a company called Change Healthcare. He was the speaker.
Well, I don't know if it was good, but I bet it was fascinating.
It was
Yeah. Because he'll just tell you, I mean, you go out on with Navy SEALs, every problem was mine. Even though it wasn't, I had to, as leader, that was mine, I should have thought about it. Or that was mine, I should have brought whatever I needed to. And, I mean, you talk about ownership, you're talking about extreme ownership there. But you're doing that here, too. You got to take that ownership. Or what good's a coach going to do at that particular point?
That's right.
I mean,
yeah.
Tiger Woods' coach, you know, is coaching Tiger Woods. He's got to take responsibility for the tee shot, whatever he's being coached on.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a fascinating example in the military in those situations. But and what's important about your extreme ownership comment is that, and I want to be very clear about this because we talked about this in the next generation leader concepts. That does not mean you do everything.
No,
you know, that does not mean that, oh, by God, I guess if, you know, I got to throw the hat on and go do it myself kind of thing. And if I want it done right, I've got to do it. No, what it means is that you have got in any given day 15 to 20 things going on that are going to impact you in that day. How do you prioritize? How do you, you know, in Jocko's case or in a Marine Special Forces or a Navy SEAL, they're making those decisions within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what goes into the United States military training is coaching and the ability for that squad to act as one. Everyone knows what the decision is going to be most of the time before the LT or the sergeant even says it. And so they're already reacting in those situations, and they know how to act as a unit. And they also know that, to your point, you know, what Jocko said in those examples are that if it was missed, it was his fault.
Yeah.
He owns it. You know, I should have thought of that. I should have planned for that. I was an oversight. So an incredible amount of accountability there.
Let's move on your list. Although I could stay here for a long period of time,
and but some of these have overlap. With each other.
Well, and the next one, truth is power. I mean, to me, that's just an extension of what we talked about because you got to tell yourself the truth. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't get my fat butt out of bed. Whatever it is, you've got to own that.
Right.
And that truth continues on.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have the day where you didn't do that, but you know that you own it, like you said, I just didn't do it that day. That's entirely different than shirking that in some way, or rationalizing that in some way or other. But when you
Dorinda didn't wake me up, that's why I overslept.
That's
a problem.
Right.
You know?
I don't normally hit the snooze, but I hit it this morning and then I shut it off and went, you know, I didn't get up.
Right.
You know? The truth is power component I put on this list because that is one of the fundamental things of how I view myself in a coach-client relationship. I am the mirror of truth, and I will challenge individuals. Is that truly, or is that truthfully, or is that really what's going on? Because the rationalizations and the excuses come fast and furious. And so in those situations, it's a coach's job to really get to the truth of the matter. And as it talks about in this, you know, the description here is that, you know, we're not out to hurt, but we're out to clarify that this confidential conversation that we're having. And keep in mind, and I think I've said this before, even if a company is paying for an executive to have coaching, there's still complete confidentiality between that executive and the coach. It's not me running out to the CEO and saying, here's what we discussed today. So if that individual can't be completely honest about what actually happened, that they did not meet the goal that they set for themselves, right? Because I didn't set the goal. then we need to talk about that. And fundamentally, we're switching from a dirt road to a county road to an interstate highway. We're on the interstate highway when that individual owns the fact that they set the goal, they did not achieve the goal, and now they're adapting to actually get there. So they're looking at it with 100% truthful eyes in that case. So it's something that great coaches don't let their clients escape from, and it's critically important and part of the process for it to be successful.
And again, when you talk about goals, I mean, goals is a result of the processes and systems. So it brings you back to those processes and systems, even when it's a missed goal or hit goal, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, if before coaching begins in a corporate situation for me, we're going to do the consulting component to make sure we at least have some level of goal to begin with. I could certainly, if it's a one-on-one situation, say it's a CEO reaching out and saying, hey, I want some business coaching, not with my team. I just want to have a coach. You know, that doesn't have to necessarily be the case that I examine their business processes to coach that individual. So it can be different, but you have to have the source of truth, which to your point is the process that everybody agreed upon in that example.
So question here, you talked about having a business coach where you're going maybe with the CEO direct, and then you have the company has brought you in to maybe it's the executives or the entire team, or you don't do the whole team very often, do you? It's usually the leadership team.
It's usually the leadership team. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then so what I would call middle management beneath executive management, they can get involved in the 360 evaluations that we've talked about where they'll actually rate the executive team. Always a humbling experience to have, you know, your subordinates rank you in various categories, but they're not usually the ones being coached. They're just part of the process of rating the executive team. So we have some feedback.
Is there, and I know what you're going to say, well, it really depends on, you know, the situation, but is there a reason to have just the CEO instead of the executive team, or one way or the other there that you prefer?
It depends upon the situation. No, I'm just kidding. It was a softball, okay?
It really was. And it's, I'm sure, part of the answer anyway.
Okay, so the question is, I guess I don't really understand the question.
Somebody's sitting out there going, okay, I know I need some coaching. I don't know if it's me or if I should get my executive team involved. Mm-hmm. You know, do you have a favorite that people do? Would you prefer to just go to the CEO and coach, or do you like it when the executive team is included?
Well, since I'm typically getting involved because revenue is declining, right? Okay. Or there's an issue, or it's not now where it has historically been. There's an issue of some type. So I'm going to get involved with sales leadership as well. And one of the things that I want to do in that case is help everyone understand you're all in sales. If you're in accounting, you're in sales. If you're in marketing, if you're in delivery. Yep. So those conversations usually lead to some level of entire executive group or key business leader group involvement. It may not be the same intensity with all of those. For example, I may coach the CEO in that case, coach the head of sales, and we'll have once every month meetings with the other executives. And those will be presentations by myself, but interactive sort of activities with the executive team.
Gotcha.
But there needs to be an understanding that sales isn't on an island in that case. And sometimes that is part of the problem.
100%. His name is Eric Q. Reynolds. You can find him on LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds or on Facebook at EQR Coach, or go to his website, lvl5consulting.com. This is the Level 5 Podcast. This is Episode 8. Again, his name is Eric Reynolds, and really wants you to team up and learn more about Eric. And, you know, here's what I would say is it's not a situation that Eric's been to school all of his life, and all of a sudden now he is the coach. Eric has learned face-to-face with clients. He has learned with a number of major jobs, some smaller jobs. But this coaching is something that has come out of your desire to be better and your desire to learn. And you have been training for a number of years, but also you've been out there with the responsibility. Revenue's on you, big boy. Go make it happen. And you've led a lot of teams in doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my wife was the one who originally identified coaching as something she was interested in. And then, as she often does, says, "Hey, let's do this together." Mm-hmm. I was, what? I just got 130% of my quota. What are you talking about? I need coaching.
They should come to me for
yeah,
coaching.
That's right. Yeah, they should hire me part-time, and I would run their program. No, I'm just kidding. I forgot to mention this last week, actually, because we talked about the alphabet soup, uh-huh. the titles uh-huh. and the letters. Jen has more letters than I do, by far, because she's a massage therapist,
uh-huh.
a physical therapist. She's got all these credentials from myofascial release training. She's a coach, certified, like I am, CPC. So she, I mean, it's just
what am I stuck here talking to you for?
I know. You got plan B. You got plan B. You said you wanted budget. You got budget.
You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast, Episode 8. We're talking about coaching. We're talking about the foundational principles in coaching. Nothing exists in isolation of anything else.
Yeah. How do you think that one resonates in general?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I think it was the example they used for us, which was a heavy science-based example, but butterfly flaps its wings in, say, Japan, and, you know, weather happens ultimately in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the interrelationality. I know that's not a word, but let's just go with it today. It's that interlocking aspect of life itself. And if you haven't already noticed, you could skip through Proverbs mm-hmm. and find a lot of these principles, mm-hmm. right? So in many cases, these are either simply restating or reframing some of those principles, biblical principles, which is part of what I love about it. But it's a situation where, as an example, let's say, trying to come up with new names here, Sally is the CEO of a company. And she's got three executives that report to her. It's a small business, about 130 people. Sally comes in that day, and she is in a level two mood, right? Somebody's going to lose. Mm-hmm. I'm going to win. Somebody's going to lose. Now, any one of those other three executives could have been coming in at level five, right? They could have been whistling while they walked in the door. Happy day.
Sally was going to take care of that.
Sally was going to take care of that, right? What were they called? The TPS reports in
yeah.
the office?
Yeah.
Did you do the TPS? Where we normally fax the TPS reports or something like that. So there is an interrelatedness to all of that that exists. Now, the question is, how do you surf that interrelatedness? You know, do you live at the effect of that, or are you out front at the cause of that? Because one of those individuals could turn Sally right around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sally, I noticed you're trying to pick a fight today, basically. Tell me what's going on. You know, Sally could snap out of it at that point. So we have interconnectivity that happens in every aspect. And I think that why I included this in the list is because oftentimes we get delusional about our ability to do something solo or some event or some activity that's not going to impact others, right? And it's just not the case. There's always something that happens as part of our reaction or action. So as in a coaching session, bringing it back, this concept into a coaching session, there are many times when an individual will tell me, let's just say an event happened at work and, you know, there was a discussion. They said something in the break room. And my question might be, how do you think that impacted your coworkers? And their response, I don't think they even took notice of what I said. Not the case.
Yeah.
Not the case, you know. So unless they had earplugs in or had their AirPods in and were listening to tunes and literally could not hear the individual. No, there's something that happened there, even if what happened wasn't obviously exchanged between the people. Does that make sense?
It does.
So being aware of how your energy can be a rising tide that lifts all boats, or the torpedo that sinks the biggest ship, however you want to phrase it, you have a new awareness. And with that awareness comes a sense of accountability. Again, back to accountability in what your actions actually mean.
One of the things we talk about here, and we've talked about this a few times, but I just think it fits again here, is we're going to own every problem we have. And if there is a result we don't like, we're going to own that result until we figure out why that result is happening. But if it continues to be Eric's problem, then ownership or leadership, not ownership, but leadership in this particular case has to own that problem. And we're either teaching Eric or allowing Eric to do that. Mm-hmm. Is that fit here in what you're talking about? Because we can't just go, well, that's Eric, that's his attitude. And sometimes he's going to come in every third day and just blow everybody up, but he's really good at what he does. That ain't cool. That can't go on, regardless of how good Eric is.
Right. Well, for starters, it's not a, you know, we all win or we don't do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So because there are people losing in that situation, if I blow up in your analogy, right? If I start biting people's heads off but gosh darn it, you know, he sells 125% of his number every year, every month, whatever the case may be. So there develops this sort of executive shielding that is a thing that
it is
talking about
100%.
And it's like
I've benefited from it in my time.
Yeah, you don't want to poke the bear. You don't want to, you know, whatever the case may be. The reality is, it has a tremendous cost within your organization, whether you're able to see that or not. And that's the important aspect of this, is there's no vacuum that's actually happening. Just because, say, I only do it on Wednesdays for whatever reason, you know, you can bet when he comes through that door, he's going to target somebody right out of the gate. But gosh darn it, we get 4 good days out of the week out of him. You know, no, that's not what's happening. You know, that's
right.
It's just not that that's an illusion or a delusion, depending upon the situation. So. It's a very high level and I think fairly common sense principle, but the impact of it is felt deeply across organizations.
But don't we have to be careful with that? It's really easy to go, I mean, this is common sense. This is pretty simple. Everybody understands it. It's not about whether we understand it. What are we doing about it? How are we in this particular case? I mean, it's leadership because it's a person, but how are we managing expectations or managing those behaviors to make sure that we get it under control?
Yeah, when you look at the situation and say, okay, how are we going to handle Eric? The first thing that you would, you know, want to understand is what's going on in Eric. You know, of course, there's the oddity of it being on Wednesdays, right? But so there's a conversation that needs to be had, and there's a way to approach that conversation, and it's with open-ended questions and help me understand why only on Wednesdays you come in here as, I always get these mixed up, is it Mr. Hyde or Dr. Jekyll? I don't know whoever the bad one is, right? I mean, really, do you know?
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. I just always use them together and then people can decide.
I had it when I watched Abbott and Costello as a kid, but I don't remember who's the monster now. But anyway, and the other 4 days you come in as the nice scientist guy, you know,
right.
We'll just say that.
Right.
So those things can, you know, and I will say this, you will find more often than not, people want to be held accountable for their actions. There's something in that case that I needed to get out, or I just, whether I knew it or not, I needed to talk to someone about what's happening. And the mere fact that you're telling me as my boss, you're showing me that A, you care about why I'm doing that to other people, and B, you care about the other individuals in the organization as a team, again, level five, right? It begins to have an effect on that person. So management just can't say, oh, that's a thing, and we're going to be happy the other 4 days of the week.
We're going to move to the next. I want to read a sentence here. Is this your sentence, or should I know more about this sentence? Because this is a great sentence, the very last sentence here.
Yeah, it's not my sentence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Should I have known that?
I'm simply not that clever, Steve.
Death is not what happens to us at the end of our physical expression. It occurs any time in our life when we choose stagnation.
Yeah.
That's a cool sentence.
It is.
I wish I would have written that sentence. I did not. But it has an impact on me. And and what we're talking about here is we're either getting better, or we're growing, or we're dying. We're moving back.
Right.
We talked about this on a sales huddle this morning at 8:30 when we said, look, we've got the goals, we've got the processes, we've got the systems, but we have to be better to rise up. It is not a situation that we can work hard enough at this level to achieve everything we want to achieve. We've got to get that better view. We've got to rise up, and then we can get there. But just working harder won't necessarily do it. We got to grow as a team. And, I mean, is that what you're talking about there?
It's part of it. It's part of it, right? When you look at the word, you know, the phrase, we either grow or die. Growth can come in many forms in that context. Have you ever met that manager that, you know, I've had this where, you know, I'm already managing a team. I'm in middle management, as an example, and I want another person. I need another sales rep, or I need someone to assist the sales team with the following sort of administrative functions. And I've got that manager that just won't pull the trigger on giving me another person, you know? And in reality, they're challenging me on, do you really need another person in that case? Or are you just sort of trying to get more bodies in the mix to solve a problem that is sloppy to begin with? So if you took your, let's say it's about getting data into your sales management tool, your CRM, you know, gosh, my reps don't do it, so I want to hire George. So George puts all their stuff in for him. That way I at least have the information. Well, you've not grown in that situation because you have let the individuals who should be putting the information in firsthand get away with that. They're now not doing it. They may say, oh, I don't have the time for it. I'm busy selling, Steve. I'm out there selling. I can't be.
Yeah, that's why you're at 49% this month.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You're doing a heck of a job, too, let me tell you. So, you know, it's a situation where I now look back on that, those moments, and think, now I see why, you know, so-and-so wasn't letting me have another body for that, because my process was broken.
Right.
Right. My accountability wasn't there for my team. I wasn't managing them well enough to say, this is not negotiable. This is part of your daily behavior that has to happen. And so when you look at that growth, right, when you look at that, okay, that's an awareness. That's a wow. Okay. Now I understand that. And you continue to move forward in those directions, it gives you much more of a zest. Otherwise, as it says, you stagnate. You know, you're choosing stagnation, status quo. And individuals, I think what I find most interesting about this conceptually is a lot of people end up in a stagnation state and do not realize they are there and end up self-selecting out, blaming the organization for that stagnation that they are choosing themselves. So again, we build our own cage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, what we've talked about here intertwines because it comes right back up to, hey, you know, are you taking responsibility for what you're doing?
That's right. Yeah. How are you growing? You know, how are you as an individual? If you're in a sales organization, for example, and let's say you hit your number last year, 100% of your number, and you're, you know, cruising along this year as well, it's one of those, okay, so now what? You know, what can you do in addition to that? Maybe it's, you know, what you're reading or listening to a podcast around sales or whatever it is. You're seeking growth, or you're asking the organization, I'm seeking growth. You know, mm-hmm. I know I don't want you to double my quota. You know, it's not that kind of growth. I want to learn more. Maybe I want to learn more about management. So in those situations, you know, are you choosing that consciously, or are you just sort of moss on the tree?
There's a lot of people moss on the tree. I've been moss on a tree from time to time.
Yeah. Oh, it's happened to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, pre-coaching, that's why I brought up what I did earlier is I didn't even know that it was happening when it was happening. And they were probably saying, oh, you know, Reynolds is burned out. He's burned out. And so I didn't even realize it at the time it was happening. And then moreover that I was choosing it.
Right.
I was choosing that.
Right.
Because those gremlins, man, do they love stagnation? I mean, they eat stagnation for breakfast.
Right.
They will just be whispering in your ear all day long around that.
And it becomes the comfortable place to be, so that's why kind of we stay there. It's like that rep that goes to see the same prospect. They know they're not going to buy, but they're going to be kind. It's going to be, quote, a nice visit. I'd rather go to the nice visit than the fear of what's behind door number two, but door number two is going to get me somewhere. Possibly this isn't.
Yes.
So you got to look at it that way.
I'll give you a practical example around this. And I get met with controversy, or as the Brits say, controversy, however they say it.
There's a lot of people listening to this. Said, you just looked at Willoughby and said that word and thought you were going to get a definition back. You got know the audience, Eric. Know the audience.
Yeah, fair story. Fair. That's fair. I didn't write that one on here as a foundation.
I wouldn't have read that sentence because I had to think about stagnation. But anyway, we're getting too far away. Let's go with this.
So comp plans.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love to talk about compensation plans? I bet you love comp plans, Steve.
I do.
You probably wake up in the morning while you're brushing your teeth thinking, I cannot wait to craft a new comp plan today.
Yeah.
So I am of a firm belief that you do not incentivize long-term financial deals with hunter sales reps.
Right.
I'm not even a fan of it with account managers, farmers, if you will, of existing clients. So what I mean is you do not want to set them up on gravy trains.
Right.
So, you know, you close this deal, you get X amount of dollars, you know, for closing the deal. And if they're still with us a year from now, then you get another, you know, amount coming in, and you just, it's sort of like their commission plan just builds and builds and mushrooms while your revenues go down and down and down, right? Mm-hmm. Why? Because you're not bringing any new labels into your client base. You're not getting new customers. You have incentivized stagnation. So that this can be a part of comp plans that I have seen where, you know, Mr. Eric becomes rather unpopular in the beginning because, no, the comp plan is going to incentivize. If your job is to go out and find new business, it's going to incentivize you bigly to find that business, to bring it in, and to go on to the next one. You know, you're out there hunting. You are not building a farm,
right,
so to speak. So just a note there on process for stagnation. Companies can incentivize it is my overall point. So,
and that whole process, I mean, really, when you start looking at and small companies like we are can, and I'm sure the big boys do it too, but you can start looking at your comp plan and go, really? This is what we were saying that we wanted to happen here?
What were we drinking when we created this comp plan?
Yeah.
How many scotches in were we?
I mean, I understand it's all legal now, but we should wait until we get done for the cookies.
Always have that sentence, compensation plans can be altered or varied at any moment
right,
in time.
Right, and we're not waiting to go completely out of business before do it.
That's right.
So I'll read the last line on this, and then I want you to expand on it. We are human beings, not human doings.
I knew you'd like that one.
I did.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, well, quite simply put, you know, if you go back to the actual foundation principle, which is now is all there ever is. And if you remember, I'm going to quiz you. I'm warning you that I'm quizzing you on a Monday. Okay. So what is the only thing, the single thing that we can control as individuals?
Our response, our reaction.
How we show up in the moment, right? That is all there ever is. The now is all there ever is for us. This is all over in the Bible in the sense of what we can control, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's eternity, there's heaven, you know, there's lots of other less favorable choices as well. But all we can control as mere mortals is the now. And biblically speaking, we're encouraged to stay in touch with Jesus, with God, and be now, be in the present, be with him in the present moment, right? So in this context, I love that sentence. We are human beings. I'm being in the moment. Mm-hmm. We're not human doings. We're not looking forward. We're not worrying about what's going to happen down the line. Now, let's not go nuts with this, right? So for example, if I stand on a railroad track long enough, I'm going to get killed,
mm-hmm.
right? I can worry, but I'm, for whatever reason, I'm making a conscious decision to stand on a railroad track, mm-hmm. right? So, yes, we have the ability to know if-then situations from time to time just because they're sort of the immutable, you know, facts around how we exist. But when you think about individuals who are dealing in level one, level two energy quite frequently, right? A lot of catabolic energy, they are constantly waiting for the next bad thing to happen to them, right? Or they're worrying about what is going to be a reaction to what they're going to do, and they've already convinced themselves it's going to be negative, whatever that might be. And when you try and, again, go back to that driving it home around accountability, you're accountable in the moment in those scenarios. So let go of when you are empowered to let go of what happens when I say something in a meeting that I think is not going to be that popular, if you can actually let that go, how powerful do you think that employee becomes as part of a team, right? It's not a bunch of people nodding their head around, that's a great idea, Steve. I wish I'd thought of that. That's good. You know, walking out of the door going, well, cue the Titanic. You know, let's rearrange the, you know, your favorite analogy, the deck chairs, because we're going to hit that iceberg. I can't believe he thinks that's going to work. Those are individuals who, in the moment you brought it up, already were thinking ahead of what would happen if they would say that in real time, right? So this just encourages you to stay in the present because it's all where we can consciously control. Can't control the future. Can't be regretful about the past, you know? And so it's a powerful context. And I mean, I struggle with it. I think everybody probably struggles with it because we have situations where we have concerns, you know, and it's part of something that can consume us if we don't keep a handle on it.
So one of the things we do here is we ask for pushback. And when you ask for pushback, you're usually going to get some pushback on an idea, or in some cases, you know, and we kind of call this out too. Some cases people are going, well, I can't think of anybody wants some, so I got to come up with something. No, let's keep it, you know. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, from a coaching point of view, is that the smart thing to do? Or do you think that that opens up? Because it does present some things sometimes that you got to go, okay. I appreciate the pushback. I've asked for it. I just don't see the connection here. I mean, if what you're saying happens, we'll have to deal with it. But are you really seeing that? And a lot of times that gets other people involved. Yeah, I do or I don't or whatever. That type of communication, is that strong? Is that something you would recommend?
100%. Yeah. If we go back to military examples, special forces commanders, they're going to roll the plan out to the squad. They're going to say, where does this fail? Where do we all die on this map?
Mm-hmm.
They want to know, because someone can spot it and the others don't see it. Maybe. And why is that? Because everyone's had a different life experience, you know? So the collective experience that you have on your team in a room is best harnessed when you do not put them on the same sort of thought track you're on. So it's a fantastic tool to ask for pushback, as you're saying, or ask where this is going to fail or why it's going to fail. And if everyone's in agreement that it's going to work, if you don't really get the pushback, you can always rephrase that, you know, in different ways. For example, let's all switch. Let's just do counterpoints. You know, John, give me a counterpoint on this. Where would this fail? Even if John likes the plan. That flipping of, you know, and again, if we go back to some of the original things we talked about, which is let's not view things as bad or good. Let's just simply look at everything as an opportunity. So when you start to frame that as, well, now if I think of, you know, I like it. I like the plan that Steve's come up with. Where do I see a hole in it? Here. And so it's invaluable in those cases. At some point, though, I like what you bring up. You've got to call the shot. You know, as the leader, you're seeking the feedback. You're going to make the decision. You're not the individual that always has to come up with the answer. You know, we've chatted about this. Don't let people come in and back the dump truck onto your desk and say, what do I do? Right.
Right.
So in those meetings, I think it's a great habit to challenge yourself and your ideas.
You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast. This is Episode 5. You can learn more about Mr. Eric Reynolds at LVL5Consulting.com. That's LVL, the number 5, Consulting.com. Join him on Facebook at EQR Coach or on LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds. We're talking about foundation principles in coaching and the importance that these have. And let's remember that Eric is about leadership. He's also about helping you on the revenue side. And, you know, one of the things that we believe here, and I think Eric definitely is a believer of it as well, is that small business people, companies, they have a lot in how we get this society maybe going back in the right direction, or however you want to look at that. We need strong businesses. Strong businesses really offer a lot of support and opportunity to our families, and it's just vitally important. And whether it's a football team or a business, leadership is so important. Again, that's why I love the sports analogies kind of get aggravated and people go, I hate sports analogies. I'm not trying to make you a sports fan or not. It's just very simple to look at this. When, you know, when great coaches join an organization and they have a track record of improving that organization, there's a lot to learn there, all away from the X's and O's. It's not better X's and O's. It's better standards and expectations and accountability and all of those things. And when we look at business, isn't the same. It's really the same principle, right? I mean, yeah. You're not going to walk into a business and just all of a sudden make the products better, but you're going to walk in and help people to be better and help teams become better, and products will take care of itself.
Yeah, you want to be, excuse me, you want to be nimble and adaptive. You want to be able to adapt. I put $20 on a line the other day with a friend of mine who bet me that the Cardinals won't be in the playoffs this year. And I took the bet immediately. And man, have they been off to a horrible start. Mm-hmm. But the day that I took the bet was the day they played the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Beat the snot out of them in that game. And my point with him was, look, I understand that they're not doing well. Coach, you know, what people are thinking right now. But that organization as a whole adapts. Great sports organizations adapt. They're only are we even a third of the way through? Not even close.
No.
So I thought it was an easy 20. To get into the playoffs?
Yeah.
You know, that's an organization that it's never just shooting to get into the playoffs. So hopefully that's a byproduct of their goal.
I can't remember who the Springfield Cardinals were playing, but I was actually up there for a thing. It doesn't matter why I was up there, but I was watching during just warm-ups and watching during between innings. And the difference of that other organization, that the shortstop was flipping the ball around behind his back and it was just Mr. Whatever, Mr. Cool, compared to seeing how the Cardinals mm-hmm. did that. And then, you know, but that starts a leadership. All the way down. So anyway, I'm not trying to talk baseball.
As people moan in baseball or professional baseball or sports or whatever, when folks say the Cardinal way,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The Redbird way. There is a Cardinal way.
Yeah.
And it's a code.
Yeah.
And so if you want to argue with the second best World Series, you know, gathering team in the history of the game, okay, you can do that. But it's statistically speaking, it's very reliable.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. We need to wrap this up as we get to the end of episode 8 here. Each person we meet is both our teacher and our student. I feel like you should call me Grasshopper or something right here, but that is true. I mean, you know, when I was on the air, I would listen to people that I didn't like, that I did like, that didn't have any talent, I thought, or did have any talent. And I would try to learn something, even if that's, okay, I don't like how that necessarily sounds. I want to stay away from that. Or, wow, I really like this. I got to figure out how to incorporate. My point is, you can learn from anybody when you decide you're going to learn from anybody.
Absolutely. This is my favorite one of all of them, quite simply because it resonated with me so powerfully when I learned it. And I realized that, you know, if you look at life in this regard, right? So we want to talk about, you know, prejudice or discrimination or, you know, inequity or whatever it might be out there. If everyone has this philosophy that someone could be there to teach them, or they're, you know, vice versa, where you're there, they're your student in some cases, right? It's just a sort of this symbiotic aspect for individuals. To me, it's tremendously powerful. When I first met you and we had some pizza, mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. I was fascinated by the conversation in general. Because radio as a whole was just a mystery to me. I, you know, never been in a radio station. we're going to have to cut that section
okay.
out.
Yeah. We will.
I had a cough coming up. I was trying to hold it back. So I'll re-answer that question.
Okay.
Let me get a drink here. Sorry. This thing is almost dead. God, it's been a pain, lingering cough piece.
Nothing like starting a new job and not feeling good.
Oh, yay. All right. So, yeah, this concept that everyone we meet is both our teacher and our student. It's incredibly powerful to me, realizing that if everyone sort of walked through their day looking at other people as, you know, they could learn something. Maybe I've learned something that they haven't, right? But I could learn something from them as well. They may have a life experience that I don't, a situation along those lines. It really changes the energy that you engage people with. We grabbed a bite of pizza when we first met. I was fascinated that I'm sitting across the table from a radio station, GM. And I just imagined all the things that you know about radio and have experienced in your career. And, you know, how different that is, but yet how curious I was about that. And yet at the same time, how I've had, you know, 25 to 30 years in sales.
Absolutely.
And leading sales teams. And we just had a great conversation.
We did.
Around that. So it's something that helps you check ego, because that can be very destructive if that gets out of hand. You need a healthy ego, but you do not want it to get out of hand because it will blind you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're able to keep that in check and consider the opportunity, and I would even say go so far as to dig for the thing that that person can teach you sometimes, not like you say, what can you teach me? You
right.
know, they're going to call 911.
Right, right.
But trying to understand individuals from that perspective, it does change your outlook on life in general.
And this is really, I mean, we didn't write this paragraph by any stretch. I don't want to go there, right. But that's really changed who we are too, because one of the things, and this is going to seem so silly, but I was getting frustrated with the team because we were bringing on interns and everybody wanted to give the interns a hard time, you know, how that whole thing is young and all of Ace that. Them. Yeah. And I was like, look, I get it, but, you know, you're giving them a hard time because they're young and you'd love to be young again. Don't tell me you wouldn't. You would love to be in that situation of being young again. And how about if we listen to them, because there's probably from a technology department or just a people department, there's some things we could learn from them if we really wanted to do that. And I got some pushback on that, but I kind of get ticked off at society as a whole for dismissing young folks, because
yes.
somehow we grow past 45 and we forget about all the dumbass things we did and acted like we were perfect growing up.
Right.
And I'm
right.
like, hey, I was there. I mean, you know, I grew up in this area.
Right.
I remember when we learned to inhale together. So let's not be judgmental, okay?
Right.
So, I mean, that's something that is just really, let's learn from people and see what we can do instead of setting ourselves off as better. You know,
yeah, absolutely. And you'll find this in every single person that you meet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a horrible interaction with someone, we've met them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what's going on in their day, but they snapped at me and they, you know, what did I learn? What was taught to me? I probably want to stay away from that person.
Right.
You know, that, and yes, I can look at it a million ways, right? I could look at it as, well, I want to ask them what's going on and help them out. But you're teaching other people how to deal with you through your actions, right? So you learn about individuals in so many different ways. But keeping in mind that everyone has something that could aid you, as it says, in your journey, not change your life, not give you the grand epiphany, but aid you somewhere along the way, I think is incredibly helpful.
And we really don't know what people are going through that particular day, you
right.
know? So,
and some of the excitement is not knowing what it is that
right.
they have to teach us, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I've screwed that up many times too. I just don't want to give the impression that I'm perfect there. I definitely.
Well,
Eric, thank you. Really appreciate it.
You bet. This was great.
Foundational principles on coaching and in coaching, and we would encourage you to find out more. Go to LVL5consulting.com. That's level5consulting.com. You can learn more about Eric there. You can learn about him at EQR Coach on Facebook or Eric Q. Reynolds on LinkedIn. We're back next week with another, I guess it's episode 9 of the Level 5 podcast. Tune in.
Till next time.